This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me once again, as he is every week, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, you know, I thought we did something a little special and retrace the steps of Sisko and Curzon Dax and, you know, take a trip together to the scenic cliffs of Bol that are on the Bolian homeworld.
Well, Chris, it's really beautiful here. I love the lavender oceans here on the breeze is fantastic. You know, Bolian liquor is you know, we don't hear a lot about it on the show, but I've got to say this Bolian spiced whiskey is delicious.
It's pretty good. Although what's interesting about that is, it's so strong, but you can't say that it's so strong that it raises the hair on the back of your neck because, you know, Bolians, they don't have any hair on the back of their necks.
Well, that's true. I mean, Chris, they don't. I mean, we do, luckily. We both, I think, might not look as good if we didn't have hair. So I'm glad we do. But it is excellent to be here on Bolius. The Bolians are really good people, so I really appreciate their hospitality tonight and their spiced whiskey.
Well, Matthew, we're talking about Bolian this and that today because we're doing a little special show since the last time we recorded. We had to take a week off last week. We had some things that came up for us and we weren't able to record, but we're back. And during that time, we learned that Cliff Bol, the very prolific director of Star Trek and lots of television shows, passed away at the age of 76, and he had such an impact on Star Trek. In fact, the Bolians, the race, are named after him, as are the Cliffs of Bol that we were visiting here in the introduction. And we thought it would be nice to just share with everyone not only Cliff Bol's work on Star Trek, but specifically the work that he did on Deep Space Nine, because he did direct 7 episodes of DS9, starting from towards the end of the first season through the end of the 3rd season.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting, Chris, when I was looking through the list of episodes that he had directed, and actually some really, really good episodes. I was really surprised when I went back and looked. I mean, one, we do have to mention, and I'm sure almost all the fans who are familiar with just some of the great directors that Star Trek had, you know, Cliff directed probably one of the hands-down greatest Star Trek episodes, part 1 and 2 of Best of Both Worlds, which was in the theater last year, which was fantastic because they actually had him on the making of, which you can get on the Blu-ray if you buy that, which I know you have, Chris. Yep. So you'll see him there talking about everything that they worked on, which is fantastic. So, I mean, really prolific director. In fact, I think he directed 25 different Next Generation episodes. He's got 7 Deep Space Nine episodes, and then he also directed Voyager as well. So, I mean, he directed a lot of Star Trek, which is really exciting. And, you know, having such episodes on Deep Space Nine as, you know, Cardassians, Collaborator, Facets, Explorers, it's just a really, really great list of Deep Space Nine episodes, and with a lot of fun character episodes as well. So really nice that we just get a chance to talk about some of his episodes and some of his work. And it was sad that that he's not going to be around anymore, because I think he added a lot to Star Trek when you look at all that he did in directing these actors in some really great episodes.
Yeah, you mentioned that besides the 25 episodes of TNG and the 7 DS9, that he directed Voyager as well. He directed 10 episodes there, and that totals 42, which I think is quite fitting because it is, after all, the meaning of life.
Yeah, that's so much fun, Chris, that you get to have that little tidbit there for the number 42, which, hey, it's also the name of my blog, so that's pretty exciting.
That's true. That's absolutely true.
Yes, because I like to write about life, the universe, and everything in between.
That's
so
right. Well, before we get more into, you know, what he directed, we did want to give just a little bit of a background to him. And Cliff Bull was born on November 9th, 1937. And then he passed away on February 15th, and I believe it was kind of the following week when we really heard about it. At least it was for me when I found out that had actually happened. But he did pass away peacefully from reports at his home there in Palm Desert, California. As I mentioned earlier, he was 76, so it is good that he just passed away peacefully. What I find interesting about Cliff Bull as a director is how you get interested in things when you're young, and then that leads you into a career. And, you know, sometimes the things you're interested in don't lead you into that, and you end up somewhere else. But Cliff Bull had described himself as a set rat, which is not to be confused with the Cardassian vole, even though they are...
Oh, no, that would be inappropriate, Chris.
No, but they're similar in that they sneak... That's true. They sneak into places. And what he meant by calling himself a set rat is that he used to sneak into the studio backlots so that he could watch movies or TV shows being filmed, because he had this great interest in the art. And then he actually got into Hollywood by training as a script clerk and then also as a production assistant. And then he was able to move into directing. And so he really did kind of climb that ladder from initial interest in the art form and then going through the path, you know, of getting your foot in the door as a script clerk and then moving on up and then becoming such a prolific director. You know, he is someone who really did realize his dream.
Yeah. And I think that's something that's really needed. It really gives us the opportunity to kind of look at life and just see how you can turn those passions into something that you can do for the rest of your life. And I think that's an important lesson to us all. And two, you know, one of the reasons, Chris, that we didn't record last week is I was at a funeral for my grandmother, and just being faced with that idea that, you know, life doesn't last forever. And so we don't want to waste the life that we are given. You know, seeing somebody like my grandmother or somebody like Cliff, you can really see that these are people that lived life very fully. And when they left this earth, I think they left a mark, and that's something to be proud of. You know, that's really, really cool. And so I think it's great to be able to talk about Cliff and his legacy, you know, not only in Star Trek, but I'm sure that if we talk to his family and friends, there's a legacy that goes beyond something like Star Trek. But what a cool thing that, I mean, gosh, Star Trek's been around for a really long time now. I mean, we're going to get close to 50 years, which 2016,
yeah,
Chris,
yeah, coming
50
up.
Years.
Yeah.
So the legacy that he's going to have, we know that it's going to continue for a long time. And what a neat thing that he's a part of Star Trek, and he'll always be remembered, especially as we talked about with some of the amazing episodes that he was fortunate enough to get the chance to direct.
Yeah, speaking of those episodes, the first one that he directed for Star Trek was Lonely Among Us on TNG. And then the way that the whole Bolian thing came about is that the third episode that he directed was Conspiracy. And Conspiracy was the first episode of Star Trek that ever had Bolians in it. And so this race needed to be named, and so they were named the Bolians after Cliff Bull. So that's how that came about. And you already mentioned the best of both worlds, Matthew, and I'm not going to run down every single episode of Star Trek that he directed here because the list is so long, but I will just mention a couple from TNG. Unification Part 2 was directed by Cliff Bull. So, you know, the great Spock story, the conclusion of the Spock story. And he also directed, which something for me is an episode that I like, and I know a lot of fans really don't like, but towards the end of season 7, Emergence, where the Enterprise is kind of coming to life and generating a new life form, and they have all those really bizarre scenes on the holodeck with the train. And I really like that episode. That was directed by Cliff Bull as well.
Chris, I think it's pretty cool. You know, not only does he get to do something like, you know, the best of both worlds or anything like that, he got to do some great episodes. And we'll just mention real quick on Voyager, we'd be remiss if we didn't. Tuvix, yeah, which is a really popular episode with fans, some great moral quandaries in that episode.
Great episode.
Future's End Part 2, which such a fun set of episodes, Future's End Part 1, and then he directed 2. And then, of course, he directed Dark Frontier, the big, you know, event movie that they did. So that's pretty amazing as well. So they really took this guy and they trusted him with some of their biggest episodes in three different series. And what I think is really interesting, though, is we look specifically at his Deep Space Nine episodes. They're all character-driven episodes. I mean, Deep Space Nine is already a character-driven show. We talk about that all the time. But he really gets to dive into some great character episodes, especially his first episode here. Dramatis Personae is his first directorial work here on Deep Space Nine. And just reading about it today, and they were talking about, you know, the fact that they were doing this episode in the first season. You know, Ira Stephen Bear says, this is an episode you would most likely usually do in like a third season when you actually really know your characters.
Right.
But they took a huge risk and created some really memorable scenes with the cast very early on. And it's very TNG type of episode.
Yes. Yeah.
But to me, I think it's one of the standouts of season one. We haven't gone through and, say, talked about an entire season and talked about our favorites and our least favorites. But to me, if I'm watching through season one, I actually really enjoy this episode because of that fact. You're giving all these characters an opportunity to play off themselves, which I thought was really interesting. And Cliff had also directed Avery Brooks beforehand, and so he kind of knew the range which Avery had.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he really encouraged Avery in that episode to just really go for it, to do everything completely different that, you know, he would never do normally with Sisko, which I think is a lot of fun. And you can really tell that, you know, Avery took that idea and completely ran with it.
Right. Yeah. Cliff Bull had directed three episodes of Spencer for Hire, which, of course, is the show that Avery Brooks was on before that, where he played Hawk. And yeah, that's what Cliff Bull said about this, that the public didn't know the extent of his abilities for a long time. This man is awesome. And so he was able to pull that. It's always great when a director has, you know, past experience with an actor on the show, and especially the lead in that case. You know, what's interesting to me about this episode, though, you did mention it's very TNG, is that this is an episode that I think it works okay, but it's nothing against Cliff Bull's direction. If anything, I think the fact that he directed it probably helped save the episode for me, because it is an episode that could be a TNG episode. Like, there's nothing about this episode that's DS9. To me, it's just a Star Trek episode. And the fact that he had so much experience directing TNG coming into this episode, was probably able to make that episode work. But as far as what Iris says about it being a third season episode that was done in the first season, I do agree with that. I think it's one of the weaknesses of the episode, though, is that we don't know the characters well enough yet for this type of story to fully work. But it was it is in the first season. I would agree with you. It's probably, you know, it's one of the strong episodes of the first season.
Well, I think that, too, that's one of those deals that when you go back and rewatch it, it's better than it was the first time.
Definitely.
You know, because when you're watching it, like you said, exactly, you watch it through that first time and you don't really know these characters. You can tell that they're playing against part, but you haven't really seen enough of them to totally understand that. And so it is really fun when you go back and watch the episode and you can see them playing little bits of maybe their alternate universe versions of themselves and those kind of things. I really do enjoy that a lot. Yeah. And so
now, you know, one piece of trivia here, Matthew, and this is going to become a running theme tonight. Who's not in this episode? Sirach Lofton. He's not in this episode.
Really?
That's right.
I never would have put that together.
So just
that he was not in.
So just file that away, Matthew. Okay. File that away as we go on. All right. All right.
Okay. Putting that up there the old noggin. It's there.
All right. All right. Well, let's talk about the second episode that Cliff Ball directed on DS9. This is Cardassians. Okay. So the first one here is at the end of season one that we talked about, 18th episode of season one. When we get into season two, fifth episode is Cardassians. And this is also directed by Cliff Ball.
Well, this is a great episode because it's the second time that you see Garrick. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Garrick had done really well in his first episode. And they had actually wanted to bring him back in season one. They didn't get an opportunity to do that. They knew that when they got to season two that they were going to be bringing Garrick back. They knew, too, that every time that Garrick was going to be on screen was going to be a character moment for him. They weren't just going to throw away any moments with Garrick, which I'm sure made Una McCormick really happy. Yeah. But you can tell that they are using him really well. And they talked about this idea of, with this episode, they were getting to create in Cardassian something new that you hadn't seen before. You were very much against Cardassians. In fact, you know, you're really kind of on Miles' side most of the time in this episode of really not liking these people and this whole race. And they talked about this, Cliff said that for him, he really saw the fact that people started to have a different opinion about Cardassians had to do with the way that Andrew Robinson was playing Garrick and giving you all these different facets and actually giving you something to like. And to wonder about that, you know, Cardassians weren't just kind of these space Nazis, you know, that just really mean people that you were never going to like. So I think that's really interesting to see. And,
which, you know, the Cardassians are a race in Star Trek that I feel is probably a villain races, probably fleshed out better than any other race. And of course, it's thanks to DS9, but it's because they do give this sort of, this multifaceted view of them, multifaceted approach to them, and you do see it starting here.
And definitely something that, now you got me thinking, Chris, about whether who's the most multifaceted alien species. And I guess you probably have a run for your money as well with Klingons. Really? And mainly just because of what DS9 actually does with the Klingons with Martok and giving you that that whole other picture of what a Klingon can be. And it's a, you know, Ron Moore had done a lot with them in Next Generation, and then he did a ton with them in Deep Space Nine. So I would say those are probably the two biggest and best defined alien races that you get.
I agree.
Cardassians probably are a little bit more complicated, though. That's for sure.
I agree with you with Martok as an individual character. As an overall race, I don't know. I still feel the Klingons they remained two-dimensional for, especially when you consider how much time Star Trek had to work with the Klingons. I mean, they go all the way back to the original series, through the TOS movies, and through all the modern series. And I don't know. I feel like I think the DS9 writers fleshed out Cardassians far more, and especially given that they did it all within just one series. But You mentioned that, well, this episode is the one with Rugal, the Cardassian boy who was adopted mm-hmm. by the Bajoran, Proko Migdal. And you mentioned that Una, I'm sure, appreciated the efforts here with the Cardassians here. Of course, her novel, as you know, The Neverending Sacrifice, actually is the story of Rugal's life after this episode.
Yes, yes. So really neat to see that not only did she get to have an episode that, you know, really showcased her favorite character, but then taking a character that was created in this episode and crafting an entire story around him and giving us the opportunity with that book to really understand Cardassians in a much deeper way, I thought is really interesting. And so, this is a really good episode for the way that it does shift. This is second season with Cardassians, and we've seen them in TNG. We've now seen them for a whole season, and now into season two. We did need to start seeing another side yeah. to them. And so I'm really glad that one, giving Garak a lot to do in this episode, and then also really giving us a taste of what it looks like and means to be a Cardassian and not necessarily somebody who's just another person yeah. like Dukat.
Well, and it shows a shift in the storytelling style, right, from season one to season two. And this is where you really get in more to the DS9 storytelling style. All right, before we move on, a little bit of trivia here for you, Matthew. Who's not in this episode?
Well, Chris, I've been thinking about this because I remember that you had made me file something away when we were talking about the last episode. I believe that it would be Sirach Lofton.
That's right.
AKA Jake Sisko.
That's right. He is not in this episode.
That is just too bad.
All right.
Let's... So side note here, Chris, sidebar. We're going to sidebar real quick.
Okay.
Do you remember what Will Wheaton said about Cliff Bull and how he didn't really like Cliff Bull because he treated him like a child?
I think he used to grab him by the shoulder and pop him around the stage like he was not really a person.
So maybe Will Wheaton called up Sirach Lofton and was like, hey, just don't get in this episode. find a way for them to write you out of it. I'm pretty sure that's what... Sidebar over.
All right.
I just had to throw that out there for the fans. Right. That's a little trivia there for you. That's for free.
All right. There you go. So- All right. Well, let's move on to near the end of the second season, the 24th episode, The Collaborator. This is where Vedic Borel is accused of being a collaborator because they needed a way to make Borel more interesting. Like they had been talking about making Borel the next Kai for an entire year in the writer's room, but they thought this isn't really going to work because he's the nice guy and he's the friend and there's no drama around that. So how do you do that? Well, you raise questions about his character and what happened during the occupation. And this episode was also directed by Cliff Bull.
Oh, I'm sorry, Chris. Were we talking about Borel? My bad. So sorry about that. This actually is a fantastic episode. There is so much intrigue going on. And this is when I think Deep Space Nine was really running on all cylinders here. Giving us the gray within the gray within the gray. And really showing us that characters that you loved, like Kaio Paka from the first season, somebody that you really came to care about, had to put the needs of the many beyond the needs of the few and had to make that call. And Borel protecting her even now. And who she was and what she stood for and having to take the fall. And by doing that, unfortunately, making Kai win the Kai, because that's what we call her that, which is disturbing because, oh my gosh, I hate that woman.
We've got to do a Kai Winn show sometime soon.
We really do. We need to have a Kai Winn show. I actually realized, Chris, we also need to have a Jake Sisko show. We have not done that.
That's right.
And we actually have a lot of characters that on this show that we can still talk about. So stay tuned, folks.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, I think the Collaborator, it just highlights the continuing shift in storytelling style for DS9. And, you know, the pattern that you start to see here, as I said when we were talking about Dramatis Personae, that was like a TNG episode. But when you get into Cardassians and now you're into Collaborators, and then the ones coming up that we're going to talk about as well, you can see how Bol really embraced this style of DS9 and gave us a lot of depth to the stories that really helped to allow the narrative of the overall show to unfold and things for them to build upon as well. Okay, before we go to the next episode, Matthew, who's not in this episode?
We already did that, Chris.
Sarak Lofton again. So
that's right.
The first three episodes directed by Cliff Bol, none of them have Jake Sisko in them. Sarak Lofton is AWOL in all three of these episodes.
Right. Apparently, Cliff Bol liked Sarak Lofton and the character of Jake Sisko about as much as you did, Chris.
All right, so let's move on. And now we're going to jump into season three, fourth episode of season three, Equilibrium. Equilibrium, you know, a wonderful chance to go swimming with worms. This is where Jadzia is being plagued by disturbing hallucinations. She keeps having
these... that was the episode where she went to Ryza.
Yes. No, those are all the episodes where someone visits her quarters and she lets them come in, but she's in a towel. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Wait, I thought that was Lita.
Lita likes to do it too. Yeah,
yeah, she does. As we know from their episode, we'll talk about in a little bit, Facets, they were really good friends. So
that's right. That's apparently so. We never saw them on screen together.
No, but hey,
they were spending a really lot of good time friends with each other. They're great friends. Yes,
I don't really talk to her. You won't see me with her around the station. Yes. But we're tight.
They're
yeah.
real tight.
We're besties.
Yeah, that's why people called them Jadzita around the station. They were inseparable.
Oh, goodness.
Yes. No, Equilibrium. She's having these memories of Duran and this murder, and it's like threatening her life because they're afraid, you know, she's going to go into a coma and what's going to happen to her. So they take her to Trill, and they go to the breeding pools in the caves of Makala. And we really do get to learn a lot more about the Trill in this episode.
Yeah, we really do. It just gave us an idea of what these characters were. Like, you know, the idea of having all of these lifetimes in a symbiont and, you know, what would happen if you had a symbiont that you had a host that had gone bad. And what would that do then? And how would you deal with that and all that? I thought that was fascinating. And so I really did love they took this chance and finally started to give us an idea of really what it meant to be a Trill, and also just giving us the idea of let Terry Farrell do something on the show. You know, like they're really starting to find, I think, her character finally in this season. It's going to be kind of a hard season for her. There's a lot of ethereal, strange episodes they do for her, yeah. Like this. They do Facets. They did Meridian, as they called their Brigadoon episode. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a rough season for her. But this and you know, we'll talk about it in a minute, Facets, really great episodes for her, and wonderful episodes for actually allowing us to see what it means to be Trill.
Yeah, definitely. And Matthew, guess who snuck onto the set for this episode?
Was it Morn?
No, it was Sarak Lofton. He finally managed to get into an episode, yes.
Wow, well, good for him.
Morn's always there. You know, he sleeps on the set.
Well, that's true. Even if you don't see him on the stand that he's usually sitting on there, he's usually just sleeping behind the bar. He's got a bed back there.
He does, yeah.
Quark's really happy about that. So
that's right. Okay. Well, the next episode, directed by Cliff Bol, is just five episodes later, the ninth episode of season three, Defiant. Now, everyone knows this episode, right? This is the wonderful episode where Thomas Riker comes to steal the Defiant.
I thought it was just the episode where Jonathan Frakes sticks to come on and he gets to put his leg up on things, you know, which is awesome. So,
you know, I haven't seen this episode in quite a long time. Does he actually sit down in the captain's chair on the Defiant by stepping over the back of the chair?
You know, he actually might. I don't think he does because it's pretty tall. And
well,
I mean,
he can step over chairs with very high backs.
This is true. This is true. He really does have a talent. It's pretty impressive. But this was a fantastic episode. You know, again, Deep Space Nine picking up a thread from TNG and really running with it and giving us just a great look at Thomas Riker and wow, does Thomas Riker really fit on DS9? And I could say, honestly, you could have made him a recurring character on Deep Space Nine, and I think it would have been fantastic. I think he would have fit really well. You know, I don't think Jonathan Frakes probably would have gone for it at this point, but well, I could really see bringing him back, you know, maybe especially with the Maquis things that they did later on with Eddington. It would have been great to have worked him in somehow to help Sisko or something like that. I think it would have been fantastic. He does come back later in the books,
yeah.
So that's great. But
well, I think that he would have come back because actually I've heard that Jonathan Frakes himself felt that Thomas Riker should have been a recurring character on DS9. But for whatever reason, it seemed like the producers didn't want to go that way. Although Ira had said after this episode had aired, he had said, we'll probably see a return of Thomas Riker, but then it never happened. So I don't know why. I do agree he would have fit, you know, quite well into this.
Well, and it is too bad because, you know, honestly, you know, Frakes never gets a lot to do in TNG, unfortunately. There's a lot of times where he's just kind of there. But he is an actually wonderful actor. I mean, the guy can really perform, and you give him some stuff to do, you're never going to be disappointed. And so I always wanted to see more of him. Honestly, that was one of the few things I kind of liked about Nemesis was the fact that Riker was a little bit more active.
Yeah.
He might have been a little too old at that point to be kicking a big Romulan's ass, or I'm sorry, Riemann's ass, but at least he was getting something to do.
Right.
And so instead of just making out in a bathtub.
Not that there's anything wrong with that, but
well, I mean, it's Marina Sirtis. I would spend all day in the bathtub with her too if I was directing a film.
Oh, one of the perks of being the director, right?
Yeah, exactly. We're gonna need a bathtub scene here. Yeah.
Sorry, I forgot to shave this morning before coming into work. Maybe we could just incorporate that into the scene.
Exactly. You know, so just let Marina Sirtis go at your face with a, you know, razor. Yeah, sounds excellent.
You mentioned that Thomas Riker does come back in the books. Talk about the conveniences of the literary universe sometimes. In John Vornholt's Double Helix book, Quarantine, we find out that it was, in fact, Chakotay's idea for Thomas Riker to visit the station and steal the Defiant.
Well, you know, I knew that Chakotay was no good from the moment I laid eyes on him. I mean, that big old tattoo on his face. Guy's just trouble, so I don't trust him. Yeah. But yeah, I really do think it would have been great to have seen Thomas Riker around some more. Just a fantastic, fun episode. And it really went to show, I think, this was another one of those episodes where Deep Space Nine was not afraid to reference other Trek, you know, and they became the show that I think had the most reverence for the other shows in general.
They did. And people don't realize it because it's worked into the stories. It's so often worked into the stories in subtle ways or ways that just feel like a natural fit for the other story that's going on, that you have to sometimes stop and think about the fact that they are referencing TOS or TNG or whatever.
Well, and they do, I mean, really just such a good job of it. And especially here, just, you know, okay, we have this great character. Let's bring him back. Let's use him. And also too, at the same time, it's really fun because, hey, we're going to bring Frakes on the show, mm-hmm. you know, and everybody loves Jonathan Frakes. And what do you do with the promo? Well, you make it seem like Will Riker is coming for a visit, you know, mm-hmm. And then surprise everybody with Tom. And so it's just a really fun idea, and it worked really well. And it's great that, that Cliff was asked to direct such a good episode. Since, I mean, obviously he's already worked with Frakes before as well. So, just a great idea.
Yeah. They pulled the old Will Tom switcheroo on us in this one, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. But hey, there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, there's one more important thing, very important thing about this episode, actually, Matthew, before we go on. Defiant, it's a milestone in the Cliff Bohl directing of Star Trek and Deep Space Nine. Defiant marks the final non-appearance of Cyrock Lofton in a Cliff Bohl-directed episode.
Well, and it's important that you bring that up because I really like consistency, and apparently Cliff did too. So it's good to know that he was trying to be consistent all the way down the line.
That's right. So later on in season three, the 22nd episode marks the beginning of the Cliff Bohl apology tour, where he apologizes to Cyrock Lofton for washing him out of all these episodes. This is where we get Explorers, which could not possibly feature Jake Sisko anymore if it tried.
It really couldn't, Chris. And we have talked about this episode actually in a lot of detail.
Yes.
And it is a fantastic episode. Really well done. I think crafted really well. I mean, you can see the direction that he's giving, the way that he's having the camera move, especially in some of those shots where Sisko's working. You can really see the work there and the artistry there, trying to do something, I think, very different in this episode and give it a really beautiful feel. You know, this is a great character episode because it gives us an opportunity to really know Commander Sisko in a way that we haven't before.
Right.
Which is really fantastic. This idea that he's a little bit, how shall we say? He is just a little bit obsessive about things.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. Yeah.
But in a way that is really neat and fit with what they had already told us about Sisko in the first place.
Right.
So, you know, they told us that Sisko was a ship designer. He had helped design the Defiant. And so now you give him this great idea, I think is awesome, of finding this, becoming really excited about this old ship. Fits much more, honestly, than you know, Captain Picard in Generations, all hyped up on old sailing ships. So this one made sense. And I think it's another testament to the writers of Deep Space Nine. Definitely. Really pulling out all the stops to let us know what a character and who a character is. So, great performance by Cyrock Lofton in this episode. Yeah. So,
well, this is a great episode. I know it's, for both of us, it's one of our favorite DS9 episodes. And we've talked about it on here. We've talked about it on the Ready Room. And of course, Cyrock Lofton had to be in this episode because the other thing that this story does for Sisko's character is it really, really highlights him as a father and his unique role within Star Trek, especially amongst the captains, in being a true family man, being a father, having that relationship with his son. And it just all shines through in this episode. And I think, you know, every aspect from the set design to the writing to the directing, everything in this episode really works. And it's great to know that Cliff brought us this episode as well.
Well, Chris, the last episode we've kind of mentioned, I think it's probably been me who's mentioned quite a bit, but it's Facets, where we do get this opportunity to really dive into all of the past hosts for Jadzia, which I thought was really interesting. So this episode, what did you think about it?
Well, I like this episode because of the fact that we really get to delve into what it means to be a Trill. You know, I think the Trill are a really, really interesting race because, and actually, I guess we should say, Matthew, the show that we were planning to do this week is actually all about Trill and what it means to be Trill and how the past lives influence each host and all. So it's interesting that we're wrapping up our list of Cliff Bowl episodes here by talking about facets, and that we're going to do that Trill show next week. So you're still going to get that. But I think it's really interesting that in two episodes of season three that involve the Trill in this way, and they kind of bookend the season because Equilibrium, which we talked about, was the fourth episode, and then this is the 25th episode of season three, both were put into the hands of Cliff Bowl. And for me, it helps tie them together because you are getting the same vision of one director in these stories about Jadzia and the Dax symbiont and the Trill as a race.
Yeah, I think so. I think it really helps that he had already explored Duran. Mm-hmm. He was already really familiar with that character, so that when they needed somebody to play him, they decided it was going to be Sisko. I think he already knew how to coach him. In fact, I was reading that they actually had to reshoot some scenes because he had been too creepy. Like this fact that the way that Avery played it was just so over, like, it wasn't over the top creepy. It was just so subtly, disturbingly creepy. They wanted to scale it back just a little bit, but they, you know, it. I thought that was really interesting, them making that decision, and it gives you a great idea of just how, as a director, it was important for him to have already directed Equilibrium, kind of understanding the Trill, yeah, and really bringing this to life in, I think, a very fun and interesting way. And again, hey, we learned that Jadzia and Leeta are totes best friends.
Yes.
And that's exciting because I want to see their slumber parties.
Oh, I bet you do.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. It is interesting that this is the episode that fills that in. And, you know, that's the problem of having only, besides Terry Farrell, only having one female lead character on the show in Nana Visitor, but yet you needed to have another. They needed actually three females, right? Because they brought Leeta in to do one, but then they still have no one, so they have Cork do Audred. But at least Leeta got to channel Emini. And of course, it made no sense, right? Like, why would Leeta be the one doing this? And so that's when they throw in a little bit about how they're all, you know, best buds around the station. So,
yeah, which was funny. I mean, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it works. We don't see every single thing that goes on the station.
No, we don't. And it, I mean, it's fine. It you know, as they said, you know, sometimes you just have to go with it. I mean, you just have to make sacrifices, and that's just the way it goes. So,
right. That's what you said when they invited you to the slumber party, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I just had to make a sacrifice. It's not my fault, you know. I mean, what was I supposed to do? Say no?
Right. Right. And Sirach Lofton does appear in this episode.
Yeah, and he does a fantastic job. Great job, Sirach.
Very, very good. All right, so those are the seven episodes of DS9 that were directed by Cliff Bowl. One other thing I did want to just mention while we're talking about his overall career, and we didn't get a chance to do this at the beginning, are the other shows that Cliff Bowl directed besides Star Trek. There are so many of them. We mentioned Spencer for Hire already, where he did get to direct Avery Brooks. But over the course of his career, Cliff Bowl directed 12 episodes of The $6 Million Man, 6 episodes of Charlie's Angels, 12 episodes of Vegas. This is the 1978 series, Vegas. There is a new series called Vegas, right, Matthew? One recently.
Yeah, there was, yeah, for a little while, yeah.
Yeah. 4 episodes of Strike Force, 15 episodes of Fantasy Island. So another Star Trek connection there, getting to direct Ricardo Montalban. He did 9 episodes of Matt Houston, 3 episodes of V, the original 1984 TV series V.
Excellent.
another Star Trek connection here, 17 episodes of T.J. Hooker with William Shatner.
You know, now that's just really cool. I mean, talk about directing a bunch of legends back in the day. That's incredible.
yeah, that would plus Heather Locklear was there as well. So, which doesn't mean anything to a lot of people listening, but Matthew, I know if you're our age, you know, Heather Locklear was the face to
you
be
know,
seen.
She's still a hottie, so yeah. let's not take that away from her.
Also, 4 episodes of Scarecrow and Mrs. King. Spencer for Hire, I mentioned. 16 episodes of MacGyver. And I've got to tell you, you are not a director.
MacGruber! Oh, wait, wrong show. All
right. That's the wrong show. You are not a Hollywood director unless you've directed some MacGyver.
That, man, oh my gosh. I remember that show, watching it with my grandfather. It's ridiculous, but so funny.
You know, for me, MacGyver has a Star Trek connection because when I was in university, it was my junior year in university, that's when DS9 was premiering. And my roommate at the time was a guy named Sasha from Russia, and he was the biggest MacGyver fan. And not only MacGyver, but also Quantum Leap. So Scott Bakula, who of course later became Captain Archer on Enterprise, we had MacGyver, Quantum Leap, and then when January 93 rolled around, the premiere of DS9, all going in the apartment all the time. And so for me, every time I hear MacGyver, it has this DS9 connection for me because of the timing of that.
That's really funny, actually, that you had so many of those huge shows going on at one time. Yeah. That's awesome.
So also, 3 episodes of Mission Impossible, the 1988 series that only lasted 2 seasons. 5 episodes of Baywatch. And
excellent.
I thought you'd like that one. Maybe we can have, that's when Jadzia and Lita were guesting over there probably with their towels running across the beach.
Yeah, Chris, I don't even know what to say to that.
That's why they were such good buddies. It wasn't happening on the station, it was happening on the beach.
Yeah, it was happening at Ryza.
Yeah,
so
that's right. 2 episodes of Point Man, 3 episodes of Mantis, and then 4 episodes of The X-Files. So very, very prolific in Hollywood. You know, so many of those shows are the biggest name shows of their time.
Yeah, I mean, come on. I mean, Baywatch was huge. MacGyver, I mean, oh goodness, T.J. Hooker. This is a great career, and to have been able to work on all these shows, I think just shows the talent of Cliff. And so, yeah. Very excited to know that, and excited to see that he had gotten to work in Star Trek. I know that everybody probably worked with him was pretty honored to have worked with him, and you know, having gotten to see the Best of Both Worlds special that they did in the theater. I mean, it was 80s television, but that show really still does, I think, hold up.
Oh yeah.
And so really well done. And so I'm really thankful that they had him direct some great Deep Space Nine episodes and go on to direct Voyager. You know, I think that was one of the great things about Trek is not only did they get great directors who would come back time after time, like David Livingston or Cliff Bull, but they had also trained their actors who wanted to learn how to direct. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, Robbie Duncan McNeil, who's now a huge director in Hollywood, doing lots and lots of television shows, worked on one of my favorite shows, Chuck. You had Roxanne Dawson doing the same thing for Voyager. Obviously, Jonathan Frakes, yeah, who went on to direct Insurrection, First Contact. You know, so it's really cool that Star Trek has worked with some of the great directors and created some of the great directors. Yeah. And
most definitely. Well, Matthew, it's been good to take a moment and look back at Cliff Bull's work on DS9 today. And I hope everyone will go back and remember his work by watching the 7 episodes of DS9 in the weeks to come. But this isn't the only thing we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. So here are some other things that you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Futurama commentary.
Shatner is so good in this. I mean, I know it seems weird to say that. It seems weird to say that a guy is good at playing himself, but Shatner excels at that.
Earl Grey.
Q.
We've all got our claws up right now.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if he was scared of her. Like, he put out his own hand.
Did he snap her to death? Was it West Side Story?
Yeah, West Side Story.
When you're a Q all the way.
The Ready Room.
Damage. That's what made Archer's next statement so awesome. I'm not rationalizing anything. I know full well what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Like, he understands the ethical ramifications that he's taking. He knows what's going to weigh on his conscience now.
The Orb.
Runabouts.
It definitely feels more like the Old West. Mm-hmm. You know, and you're basically in a covered wagon instead of, like, a train.
But so, a covered wagon that can go warp 5.
To the journey!
Living Witness Rewrite.
This always messed with me when I was younger. Like, the retinas or the nerve endings behind his eyes are dissolving. That's just messed up.
Yeah, what?
Warp 5.
Malcolm Reed.
It almost feels like the writers thought it was fun to just keep throwing facts in and dialogue about him. You know, usually in the show Bible, you want to see people do things, and they just say, oh, we'll have this person say this. We'll have a whole episode about how he loves pineapple, but he's allergic to it.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Robert Hewitt Wolf, River World.
But when you end up at the end of your thing, having gone from, I'm on a beach and I don't know how or why, to, no, don't take the glowing rock and put it in the spaceship. That will destroy the planet, I guess. That is too far, too quickly.
Melodic Treks.
5 musical favorites.
And to see the Klingon ship dissolve in the lightning effect with that music playing, you know, at loud volumes, it was basically a geek's dream.
Literary Treks.
Spock Reflections.
And my favorite is when Amanda goes, I will never get used to a Vulcan scolding.
Right.
You know, we wouldn't take it as a scolding at all.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and get your daily Trek Talk fix. We have new Trek Talk for you every day of the week, and some days we even have 2 shows for you, and you'll find them in a variety of places, including on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, or Zune, or you can stream or download from the website. So go grab some shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. All right, Matthew, you know, after we recorded our last show, I woke up one morning and I found this really amazing email from one of our listeners. This is Nathaniel Robinson in Cary, North Carolina. And I was really touched by what Nathaniel had to say about the show, and the letter was quite long, so we're not going to read the entire letter here, but I will read a little bit of it. And he said, I've been listening to your podcast for almost half a year. I started when I was in the middle of rewatching the series for the first time in many years. Your subject-based approach to DS9 is extraordinarily helpful in bringing together all the different threads of the series, especially as some threads were left behind while others were dropped only to be revisited late in the series. Because of your podcast, I can better appreciate how the writers and producers tried to explore complex issues. And to make it a little more special, my 7-year-old son enjoys falling asleep to the podcast. And that's last bit there, especially, Matthew. The fact that a child actually enjoys listening to us discuss DS9, I just thought it was a really sweet thing.
Man, Chris, we're going to have to keep this show family friendly, too.
We are.
Goodness. But yeah, I did read that letter when we got it in, and it was so exciting to hear that, it's something that they enjoy listening to it together, and he falls asleep listening to it. I love the fact that our show and what we talk about here and how we talk about Deep Space Nine is helping to bring families together. So that's really cool.
That should be our new tagline. The Orb, helping to bring families together.
The more you know.
The Orb of Family. Yes. All right. Nathaniel went on to talk about a lot of other things as well. In particular, talking about our Penumbra show and the nature of linear time. And just mentioning that the prophets are not, he said they don't meet the Neoplatonic criteria for supreme beings. They are powerful, but not all-powerful. They are knowledgeable, but not all-knowing. I think that being outside linear time does not give them complete knowledge of time, particularly of the future. And I think that played off of, if I remember, I think I probably said something about wondering whether or not they already knew how the game was going to end, because they kind of see the past and the present and the future as one. And he said, I doubt that I have clear insights into what the writers intended, but this is just, you know, his own read of it. And I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah. You know, it's an interesting question because I don't think even the writers know what they intended with the prophets.
Right.
Honestly, I think if you probably asked Ira now, he probably would have a good answer for you after thinking about it for so many years.
Right.
He'd have a much better thought process on what the prophets were, how powerful they were. But, you know, when I did think it was interesting when he says, you know, they're powerful, but they're not all powerful. Well, you know, I don't really know if that we could say that for certain, because on either side, because we really don't know the extent of their power.
Right.
We never were given that. So there is so much about the prophets that's up in the air. And I think that that's what makes it really interesting to watch the show, because we're still asking questions even now. I mean, you know, this is a long time later, and there's a lot of questions that we'd like to have answered with these supreme type beings. We're not even sure, you know, what that means for them. So I like that Deep Space Nine gives us enough to create a great story, but also leave us asking plenty of questions in the end.
Most definitely. It does that very, very well. So Nathaniel, thank you so much for your email. I really did appreciate that. And I'm glad you're enjoying the show. And for everyone else, if you'd like to contact us, there are a number of ways you can do it. You can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the orb. That will come to both Matthew and me by email. You can also send us a voicemail through the website, or you can go to our forums at trek.fm/forums and talk to us and other listeners there about the orb, about Deep Space Nine, anything you want to talk about related to Star Trek. You can do that over there. And then in social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekafilm. And on Twitter under username TrekaFilm, where we're always tweeting away about Star Trek. All right, Matthew, when you're not trying to get another invitation to one of those Jadzita sleepover parties, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me doing literary treks with you, where we talk books and comics of the Star Trek literary universe. So join us there. I also have my own personal blog at 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. And now, Chris, when you're not just kicking back and enjoying a nice bullion spiced whiskey there at Quark's Bar, where can we find you?
I'll be behind the bar trying to wake up Morn.
That's true. After a few of those spiced whiskeys from Bolius, they are really strong.
That's
so,
right. Yeah. Now, you can find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. And you can find me pretty much everywhere on social media under that same username, as well as on my personal website at cbrianjones.com. And then on the network, besides doing literary treks with Matthew, you can find me every week on The Ready Room, where we talk about Star Trek news and all 5 live-action Star Trek series. And I'm joined there by hosts from all over the network, as well as other special guests. And then you can find me on Warp 5, where we talk exclusively about Enterprise. And I have my own interview show, Matter Stream. So check all of those out if you're interested. Also, before we let you go, we'd like to tell you about our sponsor for today's show, and that is Audible.com. Audible helps us bring The Orb to you every week, and they are the premier source for audiobooks online. They have over 150,000 titles for you to choose from. New titles coming every week. They have new releases. They have bestsellers, classics. They have some of the most famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive, Federation, and Spock's World. It's really just a great way for you to read all the books that you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have time for. That's what I do with it, especially books too that, you know, like I read in university, you know, classics where I want to revisit those. I don't have time to sit down and read these really long novels, but I can listen to fantastic narrated versions of them that I can get from Audible. And as a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with the 30-day trial of Audible. And this audiobook is absolutely free. All you have to do is go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up for the trial. Choose any audiobook you want. And then if at the end of that trial you decide not to stick with Audible, you still get to keep that audiobook. That's yours, so there's absolutely nothing to lose. But by trying Audible, you'll be supporting the network. You'll be supporting the show. So go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. And we really thank Audible for their support of The Orb. One more thing you can do to help us keep The Orb coming to you every week is to make a donation to the network. The shows, of course, are free for you to download, but they're not free for us to produce. We have to pay for the cost of production, storage, bandwidth. It really adds up because we have quite a large audience, and any donations that you make really help us keep everything going. And we have original Alien illustrations for you as a thank you. You'll find these at trek.fm/donate. You can get the aliens as badges or art prints. They're beautiful aliens done by Toba Ushi, who does most of the artwork that you see on our website. So go check them out and choose a contribution level that's right for you and let us know which aliens you want us to send your way. Again, that's trek.fm/donate, and we really thank you for helping us keep the show going.
Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time as we gaze into the orb.